Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon to all my blessed beloveds out there on Radio Land. You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty. And guess what? I'm Rusty. Today we're doing a special show. I asked Michael Russer to come back on because I believe he has a lot to talk about in regards to prostate cancer and the aftermath of removal and impotence and all of those beautiful things happen. And he's really a huge inspiration. And I'm praying with my fingers and toes crossed that we have no technical difficulties. I have a slew of emails from individuals who were really looking forward to listening to the show. And so we're going to air this show probably twice this week. That's how much I really think the message needs to get out. But before I pull Michael on, I'm going to definitely let us talk a little bit about sponsorship and how you can be a sponsor of Living and Thriving. Just go to my website or give my team inspiration, my assistants, that's what I call them, the team inspiration, a call at 941-275-1920, and I'm running a holiday special at $50 per show, which I think is very good and helpful for everyone, considering we're over 400,000 people broadcasting internationally 3 days a week. Very cool. And right now I'm going to pull Michael on. Good morning, my friend. How are you?
Doing very well. How are you, Rusty? I'm hoping this one will be technologically unchallenged this time.
That's right. That's right. That's the goal. So let's start at the very beginning, because this is really part two of our conversation, or two and a half. And let's talk about who you are, what you do, where we can find you, and then get into prostate cancer and kind of the statistics behind that.
Sure. Well, again, I'm an international speaker and author. The last 18 or so years was primarily about technology, but I don't do that anymore, and that really didn't feed my soul. So now I'm taking what I've learned and discovered in this incredible journey, what I call this journey of unexpected transformation, as a result of my prostate cancer and the resolving impotence, I am now speaking and writing about that and how that can help so many people, whether or not they are affected by erectile dysfunction or prostate cancer, because it seems to deal with so many different issues of couples in terms of relationship. And this truly was, as horrible as it sounds, especially to the men listening, this ended up being a huge gift, and it's something I need to share. Rusty, are you there?
I am, and I'm talking to you, but I didn't unmute myself.
Oh,
all right, so that was my fault.
I was going to say, oh, no, not again.
I know, and we're destined to fail this relationship. All right. Talk to us a little bit about...
You know, this is a week too early for all the frights that's coming from this.
Right? Halloween's going to be a breeze, baby.
Yeah, I know.
Talk to us a little bit about how they discovered your prostate cancer and what are the steps that guys should really consider in regards to self-help and self-maintenance. And I'm not
yeah,
getting at all. Hear any noises in the background?
Yeah, okay, there you go. It's okay. Well, in my family, there's a very strong genetic and I like to say energetic, it's bias towards getting cancer. And five other members of my family have died from cancer. I'm number six in the family of 10. And it's a pretty serious thing. So what they did is they monitored me pretty closely. And when they saw a little jump in my PSA, they started doing the tests a little bit closer together, and the PSA is a blood marker that could indicate the presence of prostate cancer, but not necessarily. all men who are normally functioning and don't have prostate cancer will have some sort of PSA level, but it's not even so much what the number is, it's whether it starts moving up suddenly, which is what happened with me. So in October of 2011, because of that, they did a biopsy, and this is what was really kind of interesting, and it works both ways from what I understand. The biopsy came back relatively mild. For prostate cancer, there's something called a Gleason score, and the Gleason score goes from, I think it's like 0 to 9 or 10, and the higher the number, the worse the prognosis is. I had a Gleason score of 3 on one hemisphere of my prostate and 0 on the other. There was apparently no indication according to biopsy. So they told me, they said, you know what, this is not a bad case. This is fairly mild. You have all kinds of times to think about it. And I just listened to my intuition, and I knew my family history, and I said, I thought about it, take it out now. So they scrambled to do that. And on December 29th, 2011, I had my prostate removed. And when they did those tissue studies after the surgery, they discovered that it was extremely aggressive. And if I had not had that out then, I probably wouldn't be here right now having this conversation. So here's the thing. For a lot of men, there's a lot of controversy right now about using the PSA blood marker as a screening device, but I just read a recent article saying that, you know, there is a lot of false positives in terms of, you know, them doing these tests and saying, well, it looks like you may have prostate cancer, and ends up that they don't. So there's this school of thought that's sort of emerging saying, you know what, we shouldn't really bother with these tests because there's so many false positives. But then they dug a little bit deeper, and they discovered that if they didn't do these tests like they're doing them now, that something like 30 to 50,000 men would die every year. And so it's like, all right, do we get the false positives, or do we save 30 to 50,000, you know, lives? And that's the thing. But something even more disturbing, Rusty, is that so many men avoid even being tested for this. And what I gather, it's not so much about the concern of, you know, the fear of facing the cancer. It's the fear of the implications of its treatment, which is potential for impotence and incontinence. And the incontinence, if it's going to happen, usually does not last forever. The impotence can. And which is in my case, and in our culture, for a man, that if he believes that limiting belief that who he is as a man is based on his equipment and how well it works, absolutely devastating. And so that's the big thing right there. And ED, erectile dysfunction, and impotence is the biggest elephant in the room in our culture today. It's like we're breast cancer was 30 years ago. No one wants to talk about it, right. Least of all men. Right. You know, they just don't want to talk about it. And I've been treated as if I were contagious at times from men. And it's really unfortunate because until we do start talking about it, it is going to continue to be a problem. Men, many, many men are going to continue to lose their lives over something they think is going to negatively impact their intimate lives, when I'm here to share that's not at all the case. In fact, this could be the doorway to far greater intimacy than you ever dreamed possible. And I'm not unique in that case. 15% of other couples who experience ED have that experience.
So explain to us the difference between impotency and ED.
Well, it's a matter of degree, really, and semantics. The erectile dysfunction means you have trouble either having or maintaining an erection for penetrative sex. Impotence is typically used for the full-on version of that, meaning it's just not working, no matter what. ED can often be treated with drugs, drugs like erectile aid, drugs like Viagra, Cialis, Muse, that sort of thing. Impotence, typically not. And so just think of impotence as being the most extreme version of erectile dysfunction. And I also use that word in a way that's because it really captures people's attention, because impotence, you know, the root of the word basically means you're not potent, you're not capable. And I use it deliberately because it really gets the attention of people. And when it comes to I may not be capable of having an erection, but I am very capable. My partner and I are extremely capable of having extraordinary intimacy on all levels. So I like to create that kind of tension between the word in terms of my physical function and the disparity of my experience of my intimate life, which is frankly off the charts. And I do that because it captures people's attention, which is what needs to happen before this discussion can be had.
Well, and what I find intriguing about it is your optimism in regards to really being able to be creative with this issue. But you must have grieved. You must have had a process of self-esteem issues in the beginning. How did you overcome that? What were the steps that you took to invigorate yourself to realize that, you know, you still can have intimacy, still can have that basic need, and it's fulfilling?
Well, in the beginning, I didn't know I was going to be able to, and it is a grieving process because it is a loss. You have a loss of function. And in this case, for most men, it is a significant loss. In fact, it's something that they would prefer. Some would actually prefer death over this, and which is so
right.
So sad. And so the four stages of loss starts with disbelief. And after being faithful to a sexless marriage for the last 11 years of a 26-year marriage, we're essentially celibate. And then after ending the marriage, I'm legally and morally able to have relations. I'm struck with prostate cancer and, of course, the full impotence and the disbelief. I literally looked up at the heavens and started shouting, "You have got to be blankety blank kidding me." You know, I'm going, really? Okay, what did I do in a previous life that I deserve this? You know,
right.
I must have been a bad guy or something, because this just isn't fair. You know, see, I have that disbelief. Then you typically go into anger, and I had plenty of that. I was really angry for a while, because that's that rallying, like there's that little bit of victimhood that kind of sets in, and any kind of loss, right? And so you can first react to it, disbelief. I can't believe this is happening. Then it's like, oh my God, I can't. Oh, this is, oh, you know, you get angry. I got angry at myself. I get angry at primarily myself, for some reason I thought I allowed it to happen. You know, maybe it was something I did that caused this to happen, which is not true. It's just part of the grieving process. Then the third stage is either negotiation or depression. And a lot of it depends on your outlook on life. I would say the majority of men go into depression because they so buy into the cultural belief that who we are as men, it depends on our physical function of our penis. And I chose not to buy into that. And I wasn't sure what the alternative was at the onset, but I tend to be kind of an optimistic person in general, always seeing, you know, there's got to be a pony in there somewhere, you know. And so I started negotiating, which is the other side, you know, the other potential for that third stage, and said, well, maybe if I try this and maybe if I try that, well, none of that worked. And in fact, it was hilariously so that it didn't work. And I finally got to the point, once I realized that my condition is my condition, I got to the point of acceptance. And this is the crucial point to get to in any loss, is essentially accept what is. Because once you stop putting your energy towards the fighting of the reality of it, which is a losing battle because it is what it is, it opens you up to possibilities that you can't even, not even on your radar. You have no idea what they are, but at least you're open to them. And that's kind of where I got to. And, you know, after I met, you know, my life partner, after a year after I was diagnosed with prostate cancer, you know, I said, you know, are you willing to explore other ways of being intimate? And neither one of us knew what that meant. We just knew that, yeah, we'd be, you know, open to it. And she was. And what came out of that is now the subject of a book, and multiple speeches, many radio interviews, and so on.
I think that's terrific. And I'm really inspired by the fact that your partner is totally open and willing to explore a different way of intimacy that's not traditional. And that's got to be very fulfilling for you. And your ego or he-go, you know, must be full throttle now that, you know, this was just a subset of learning. And the reason why you were given this gift is so that you could share it with hundreds of thousands of other people. So that's
yeah.
Cool.
Thank you. It got to the point where I realized I could make a choice. And I really believe in life, we always have the power of choice, which makes us different than all the other animal kingdom. And we have that free will. And I realized when my partner and I started having this experience, that the choice that many men make is believing the cultural myth that who we are as men is based on our ability to, quote unquote, perform with an erect penis. And I chose to instead to see how I define myself as a man based upon how deeply I can connect with my partner and how powerfully I can please her in other ways. And from that perspective, first of all, I have much more control over that than I do my bodily function. And I have to tell you, and I can speak for most men, something is so high on our list what we want to see happen in our relationship is the ability to please and connect with our partner more deeply than they could with anybody else. And once I realized I had that ability, in fact, it was what's so ironic about this is that it was my impotence, my lack of ability to get erect, that literally caused me to slow way, way down as a man during our lovemaking, and which allowed her to respond in ways she never experienced before. And what I've interviewed a lot of couples and a lot of men and women, and invariably when I talk to women who have been with men who have experienced ED, as long as they didn't go into depression, this is what one lady said to me. She said, you know, I had a boyfriend who, you know, it functioned just fine, but then he had a temporary bout of ED. And prior to that, you know, it was typical, you know, kind of physical relationship. But when he had ED, he became like the best lover in the world. And then he got his function back and he became, for lack of a better way of putting it, a big dick. He started looking for other places to put it. He just reverted
right
back to what he was. And I don't mean this to in any way create a pejorative against men in general who function normally. Please, guys who are listening, that's not the point of this. The point is that the way we are wired as men, are wired to spread that seed far and wide and as rapidly as possible. That is for the propagation of the species. Okay? That's
right.
Just the way
right
we're wired. And that's
right
why when a man gets hard, that urge is so incredibly overwhelmingly powerful. It is hard to control. And it's like it needs to be addressed like right now. And that is not how most women are built. Most women need, especially as they get older, especially as they go beyond childbearing years, they need far more time to kind of warm up and have the have a deep foundation of emotional intimacy is the foundation for everything else, and really take their time. And so what happened for me is that when I became open to it and I accepted my condition, I realized while it didn't affect my libido, which has always been pretty high, it did affect that overwhelming urge that would normally come over me when I was hard. And so because I didn't have that, I was able to then get very present and focus on my partner exclusively in terms of being present and giving to her without any goal or thought of return. And the response because of that was so off the chart that that was its own reward by a factor of 10, far more rewarding and fulfilling than anything I've ever had prior to when things were working properly, which is, I mean, to this day,
that's
I still shake my head at how that's possible.
Well, and just a female's perspective, you know, what do I know? But I'm sitting here going, yeah, right. Because women don't normally have relationships with men that are, I mean, most men are dogs, and just in their mentality. So to hear that this process for you has actually made you more of a giver is
without question.
You know, yeah, that's great. Yeah,
without question, and it's
but
real.
But you're still
it,
able
it
to enjoy it.
Oh, enjoy it. Oh, my God. I don't know if I mentioned this in the last interview, but my partner is a woman who has a response that is so far off the charts, women would kill. I promised her, at this point, she's gotten embarrassed at how many times she climaxes each time. So I promised her I wouldn't mention the number anymore because most people wouldn't believe it. And
right.
I mean, they literally would not believe it. And but the point is, okay, so here's a woman who's having this experience that most women would, you know, kill for. And and most guys would kill to be able to do that. And by the way, every couple is capable of this. I truly believe this. But it requires the man to slow down and focus on his partner first, and the woman to be very clear and candid and vulnerable in sharing what works for her. So it's incumbent on both of them and both learning to be very present in both giving and receiving. What's so interesting about one of the discoveries we made was is that we both would prefer, if we had to give up either the giving or receiving, we would both give up the receiving in order to continue the giving because we both get so much more out of giving to each other this way than we do. As powerful as the receiving is for both of us, it's doesn't compare to the fulfillment and deep, deep connection and satisfaction we get out of giving to each other without goals or, you know, agendas.
Well, and I think that's also maturity, and you guys really, really love each other, and that's something that is above and beyond what is common in this world. I think we have, as a species, have really become technologically impotent in the sense that we have foregone any emotional and physical connection with people because it's easier to text. That's how we have relationships or chat or go on Facebook, and we don't actually connect physically with people in general. So when it comes to an act of sex, it's just an act, it's just scratching a pole, you know, like a cat needing to declaw. It's not the emotional and mental psychological pieces aren't necessarily connected to the act of physical.
It's a release rather than a connection. Yes, it's a release rather than a connection.
And I find it very intriguing. I'm seeing more and more and more conversations with married couples that are now proclaiming that they have open relationships. You know, it's just sex is just something you do because it relieves, and that's it. It's not about intimacy anymore. It's not about connecting with your partner and loving your partner and having that peace. So it's intriguing and awe-inspiring for me to hear that you and your partner are able to really reel all of that nonsense back. And because of your gift, you've been able to connect with a person in a way that you haven't had a connection in many, 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 many years. I mean,
ever. I was not that level.
Yeah, I was in a loveless marriage and a very, you know, not sexual marriage myself. So I get what that's like. And the loyalty has to be there when you're married, I think, personally. You know, I was very loyal, very, made my efforts, didn't work. But
yeah.
I think our expectations are a little bit higher because we lived in that situation before.
Yes.
Does it make sense?
And, you know, yes, it does. It does. It just like when I ended my marriage, I became very clear about who I wanted to be in my life, who I wanted to share my life with. I created this Dream Woman project. But you said something so profound, and it was a realization I had, too, that eventually came to. And then you talk about how couples today, they are so disconnected because of the, you know, our technology. Yeah, they connection, true connection, human connection does not happen through the head. Which means it cannot happen through a text. It cannot happen through anything else that involves using the head. It comes from the heart. And people, I talk about our society suffering from the impotence, whether their equipment's working well or not, the impotence of disconnect. And
Correct. We
live in a society where our culture literally conspires to keep us distracted, so we don't have to feel. We're afraid to feel because in the process of opening ourselves up, opening our hearts up and feeling, being vulnerable and willing to feel means we have to feel everything. We just can't feel the good stuff. If you're going to feel, it means willing to feel everything, which is one of the choices I made. And yeah, there's times when things don't feel well, but you know what? I'm alive and I know I'm alive because I'm feeling everything. And so so many people are walking around today wondering why they can't connect deeply with somebody else. It's because we have shut down inside in a way that we distract ourselves thinking, oh, here's a connection because I'm keeping my mind busy or that's interesting or, you know, that's not real connection. Real connection requires vulnerability. Real connection requires the willingness to feel everything that life throws our way. And people will eventually, it really boils down to what I call the, you know, when the certainty of your misery finally exceeds the risking the misery of uncertainty that comes with being vulnerable and heart open and willing to feel everything, because there's a lot of uncertainty there. You know, it's like, well, what's going to happen? Well, that's part of the journey. That's part of the adventure, and it is. I can share just from my own personal experience and my partner's. It is well worth it, and it will reveal things that you never even imagined was possible between two human beings, whether it's emotional connection, physical connection.
All right, and we are running out of time, believe it or not. But
thank God,
we didn't have any technical difficulties. Yay!
There you go. Oh, my God.
So, Michael, I'm going to task you with two hard things. One is you've got to tell us where we can find more information about you. You have a book called Hardly Broken. I love it. I love your inspiration. I love what you're doing. So shamelessly plug yourself and then give us, you know, the one message that you really want the whole entire world to take away from today's show.
Yeah, you can learn more about me for my new book's coming out in 2015. It's called Hardly Broken, and you can go to hardlybroken.com, HardlyBroken.com. And the one thing I want to leave for everybody is this. I know from speaking to so many people that what it means, and I've lived it, what it means to feel shut down, what it means to feel frustrated about not connecting as deeply as I would like to. All it takes is just being willing to be vulnerable and willing to feel everything, being in the present moment. And just think about that when you can throughout the day. And just take a moment to be present, because once you're present, you are in that space of vulnerability and willing to feel everything. And that becomes the foundation for deeply connecting with anyone, whether it's your friend, your neighbor, someone you meet at the grocery store, or most importantly, your significant other.
Yay, big hugs to you and your partner for sharing your wondrous journey. And I'm so grateful, and no offense, but I'm glad this happened to you, because you,
well,
you have no idea.
And that sounds so weird.
It does sound weird. But I had actually a number of emails, because there are individuals in my social media group that are currently at the beginning stages of this process. So, you know, you've helped countless others. And I'm glad it's working for you in so many ways. You've got a great relationship. You have great things going on. And so that's a testimony to your perseverance and strength. So thank you so much for coming on again and sharing your story.
Thank you, Rusty. Thank you. And thanks to all the listeners. Thank you very much.
All right. Until next time. You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty, and I'm Rusty, and we're running a little behind, but that's okay, because Michael's story was hugely impactful to a lot of people. I'm grateful. And definitely go out, Google Hardly Broken, Michael Russer, R-U-S-S-E-R. Check him out, follow him, Facebook him, do all of that good stuff, because his story is definitely an inspiration. And, you know, guys, you're going to have to get checked out. We do. I've had pre-cancer of my cervix 3 times, and that's a constant battle. And trust me, that's about as much fun as your process of being checked out. But it's real. And, you know, people love you and they need you around. So definitely pay attention to the signs and symptoms. But until next time, which is Sunday night, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, here at Blog Talk Radio, know that you're loved. Know that you're beautiful. Know that you mean the world to me, and I'm so glad we get to walk this path together and meet so many interesting, inspirational, motivational people in the entire world, and we get to do it together. Don't forget to go out and smile. It's the best contagion on the planet.
Sponsor Living and Thriving with Rusty, inspiration on tap. Call 941-275-1920 for more information. Rusty is an author, single mother, life coach, motivational speaker, and international radio talk show host. Rusty comes from a background of severe poverty, abuse, and has recreated her life after a messy divorce. Rusty is well known for her sense of humor, determination, and compassion. She offers a series of talks to help inspire, motivate, and challenge the audience to start living and thriving. Rusty is deeply committed to motherhood and her work inspiring others. Her book, Having Tea with My Skeletons, A Journey of Inspiration and Survival, is in the editing process, 2 dates to be announced. Do you want to sponsor as low as $50 per show? Call 941-275-1920 for more information.
You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty.